Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
No surprise announcements from Liverpool as the transfer window closed in pretty quiet fashion. That was the expectation, but it's got supporters worried about the lack of depth in the squad, especially in attacking areas. We've opened the mailbag on the Red Agenda Extra to get your thoughts on how it will impact the season ahead for Liverpool. I'm Steve Hoversall. James Pearce, Kiva O'Neill, here to answer your questions. Well, look, we've got Kiva because she's recovering after a 26-mile walk yesterday with Jeff Stelling. Very important cause. Let's just start with our Kiva. The day was all about raising awareness for what?
Prostate Cancer UK, who obviously The Athletic have a little partnership with. So we've done some quizzes for them, which, you know, a lot of our listeners have been on in the past. And then, yeah, so this week, Jeff's walking four marathons in 4 days in aid of Prostate Cancer UK, and just to raise awareness and obviously raise vital funds as well for them. I think the awareness one's big because obviously men need to make sure they go and get checked. That's massively important. And, you know, just knowing about prostate cancer more, like, people don't really know about it, but, like, you know, speaking to people yesterday, they seem to, since Jeff's been marching around the country as he has been for the past few years, it seems to have just massively raised awareness. Everyone knows what the little, you know, the pin badge is now that people wear. So yeah, just, you know, such an inspiring day to be around so many incredible people. You know, the people who've survived cancer, people who, you know, are still battling on with it. So yeah, just a remarkable collection of people I got to walk with, and walk quite a long distance. For some reason, I had in my head that a marathon was 21 miles. God knows why. It's not 21 miles, Steve, James. It's not 21 miles. It's 26.2 as well. Not even like 26 and you're done. But to get to the 0.2, yeah, I didn't know that, like, I had Achilles, to be honest, until today. Like, I just thought, like, you know, when people tear them or whatever, and it's like, oh, it sounds like a bad one. I, like, got out of bed this morning and just nearly, like, fell to the floor. One last point I want to make is that slippers are amazing because I've just been sliding around the house without having to, like, bend or move. So I probably could do with, like, one of those hoverboard things. Pretty sure James's kids might have one so that he can send it over to me and I'll just hover my way around for the next few days.
She looks like Mr. Soft on this video call. I should just mention, before we go to the questions, off air, Kiva was marvelling at Jeff Stelling's calves, which apparently are a sight to behold.
Better than Shaqiri's. I've never seen nothing like her. And what an incredible fella as well. You know, the way he comes across on TV is just exactly how he is. And, you know, people were obviously wanting to get the pictures with him yesterday. Same goes for, like, Neil Mellor, who was on the walk with us all day. You know, Phil Thompson was at the start, Ian Rush was at the end, Colin Murray, I pretty much spent most of the day with him. He's a big Liverpool fan, so that was fun. Yeah, just honestly, a really good day. And yeah, please, if you can donate, then make sure you do.
Well done, everyone. Brilliant course. Absolutely brilliant. Right, let's get back to the mailbag. This is what this Red Agenda Extra is all about. I mentioned before, there seems to have been an excessive reaction to the lack of business in the transfer window. FSG, James, taking an awful lot of criticism. Over the top or not?
yeah, I think some of it has. Some of it has been. I think some of it is justified. I think I can certainly understand a sense of frustration that the Liverpool didn't do more in the window and that Klopp wasn't back more financially. You know, I've written numerous times right from the back end of last season onwards that I felt that there were a few areas of the squad that had to be addressed. You know, clearly the absolute priority was defensively in terms of bringing in another centre back. They did that very early on with Konate, but I still feel as if, you know, not signing a replacement for Wijnaldum concerns me. I think not as much as not signing another attacker, because I think, you know, probably earlier on in the summer, none of us envisaged Harvey Elliott having a pre-season quite like he did and forcing his way into Klopp's plans. So I think not signing another midfielder I find more understandable given the options there, despite, you know, that nagging issue probably in the back of my mind is, what about the injury records of players like Keita and Oxlade-Chamberlain? But yeah, I think, like most fans that I've spoken to in the last few days, I think the concern really centres around the top end of the pitch, with the fact that there is such a big drop-off between, you know, when you've got Salamani, Firmino and Jota, there's a huge responsibility on their shoulders, because, you know, I'm not convinced that we're gonna get a huge return from Minamino and Origi. Hopefully we'll be proved wrong.
It leads to a bigger question about FSG's longer term strategy. So first question out of the mailbag, this is from Helps. He says, we've reached the pinnacle of football. So obviously he's referring to winning the Premier League, winning the Champions League. And now we seem to be stumbling along in terms of decisions off the pitch. Is this possible that FSG could actually sell within the next 2 to 3 years? I presume this is one for you, James.
It's very difficult to predict what will happen in the next 2 or 3 years. I think, it's when I see people saying, you know, it's time for new ownership. It's time for, you know, for owners who are willing to put their hands in their pockets to a greater degree. I think you have to appreciate that there has to be, you know, a suitable buyer out there. And, clearly Liverpool's been a fantastic investment for FSG. I think when you go back, what is it, coming up, you know, 11 years, what, £300 million? I think probably pre-pandemic, there was valuations of about £3 billion. So, there aren't too many people in the world who are able to be in the market for an asset at that kind of value. As things stand at the moment, I'm certainly not aware of FSG thinking about selling, looking to sell. It's a huge few years coming up. I'm sure we'll go on to the fact that, you know, as things stand at the moment, Michael Edwards, his contract runs out next summer, and, you know, he has indicated at this point that there's no extension lined up. He's thinking about pursuing a new challenge. And then, of course, in 2024, you've got Klopp himself likely to step away. So, it's a huge few years ahead. But, you know, at the moment, there's no indication that FSG are thinking of selling up. And I think you've got to keep things in perspective as well, because, like, you know, I see comments on social media like, you know, a club in decline and, lost our way and all the rest of it. It's like, well, hang on a minute. You know, obviously finishing third wasn't what anyone wanted last season, but let's just remember the adversity that Liverpool faced last season. You know, they were top of the league till New Year's Day. Then the wheels came off as a result of an unprecedented injury crisis. Then they produced title form from, what was it, March through to the middle of May. So, and this summer, yes, you know, it is disappointing. I don't think we can get away from that they didn't bring in anyone apart from Konate. But, you know, I think the mood at the moment would be very different if, say, Liverpool had brought in a fifth choice attacker on deadline day. That is essentially what we're talking about. That was the glaring weakness in the squad. We're not talking about a squad full of holes that isn't able to compete. You know, we've seen a host of key players sign new contracts this summer. You know, do you really think those players would have signed those contracts if they were worried about the direction the club was going in? They wouldn't. You know, we've seen key players come back from long-term injuries and strengthen the squad. We've seen, you know, fantastic youngsters like Harvey Elliott and Cade Gordon emerge, you know, from out of nowhere, really. And of course, if you've got a massive bloated squad, then it's much more difficult to have that pathway for young players. So, I think the window could have been better, but I do think, yeah, there's been an overreaction in some quarters.
I think you put that into perspective brilliant, particularly in terms of, you know, if it had been a fifth choice striker, then people would have been appeased, which is rather bizarre, isn't it? Kiever, it is a case of glass half full or glass half empty, isn't it? You see different sides from different parts of the fan base. Question here from Lee. Is there disenchantment, and I don't expect you to know this 100%, but is there disenchantment among the recruitment team regarding the lack of backing for transfers? Is that why Michael Edwards is leaving?
Yeah, I think the timing of that is, you know, probably one the club wouldn't have enjoyed, because obviously the transfer window was still open, and, you know, it does then people kind of question, and, you know, this transfer guru, basically, who nobody knows really anything about, but is just a wizard at, you know, signing players on the cheap or just, you know, selling players, moving things around the way he does. And the job he's done has been phenomenal. With him now, you know, potentially leaving the club, and, you know, you see things like Real Madrid and things like that, sort of their name doing the rounds, and, you know, you're kind of wondering, well, if Liverpool lose him, they're going to need to replace him. And I think that's a worry among fans. But then it's, I don't know if disenchantment is, you know, I obviously can't speak for the recruitment team, but they're still going to be doing the job in the way of, you know, scouting out. The scouting system will still be there. They'll still have a list of targets that'll still be happening. You know, obviously they weren't going to go on anyone. They haven't gone on anyone this summer other than Konate. So I think, you know, there's just kind of like, you've got to be patient in a weird way. Obviously fans have every right to demand transfers and say, you know, especially when, you know, you look around the league, and I think the Ronaldo one was probably one that set a lot of fans off thinking, well, why aren't we doing anything? But I mean, that one's a whole other story in itself, isn't it? Whether it's a good thing or a bad thing for United. But yeah, I just think, I don't know, it's just a crazy world. I'm glad the transfer window's over so we can have a break from it. But then it just never stops. So yeah, I think one attacker would have probably made people more calm going into the season. I think the timing of probably the Michael Edwards news hasn't helped fans in a way, because they're probably thinking, well, you know, no one's getting brought in, whatever. But you just have to look, as James has mentioned, at the players who've signed long-term deals with the club. I think, you know, that speaks for the current setup, and particularly Jurgen Klopp. You know, they're all invested in this, and, you know, although there haven't been many signings for Liverpool, just the one, I think, you know, maybe there's something to come. That's kind of the hope, isn't it? Probably not January, but you're thinking, will next summer be big? But then we can't sort of all just, you know, hope, because this one's been a quiet one, that will be a busy one, because we don't actually know that. And that could come and go in the same way this has. And then I think then we'd really have something to talk about, wouldn't we?
I was just going to say, just on that, in terms of like whether recruitment staff are frustrated, I think, again, you've got to bear in mind that no one in that recruitment staff would have gone into this summer expecting Liverpool to be signing four or five players. That was never, ever on the cards. You know, of course, you have to be fluid and react to certain things, and they would have had, you know, shortlists and backup plans. And, you know, we wrote ourselves that, you know, Jared Bowen was on a shortlist of attacking options. And we know that they look closely at Florian Neuhaus from Mönchengladbach, the midfielder. But, you know, there would have been, you know, it's not like they would have had these fantastic deals lined up, ready to press the button on. And then, you know, a call goes into Boston and, no, you can't do that. You know, we're not going to give you the money for that. It's just not how things work. You know, there would have been various contingency plans. And, you know, I wrote a kind of transfer overview looking ahead towards how the summer would go back at just after the end of the season. And I got a lot of stick in the comments section, because I said, well, as things stand at the moment, Liverpool don't view replacing Wijnaldum as a priority because of the other options. And I think, you know, lots of people, and I must admit, you know, part of me wondered the same. You think, I know, is that a bit of a smokescreen? Are they just playing it down? But they weren't. You know, it wasn't like, you know, they did all this work to line up a midfielder and then were told the money wasn't there. And similarly, the top end of the field. You know, we've written, and I'm sure we talked about it on the podcast a couple of weeks ago when you asked me, you know, do you think we'll see another attacker come in? And I said, well, you know, only if Shaqiri and Origi both go. You know, I don't think Shaqiri going was going to lead to, you know, how few minutes did Shaqiri play last season? And then, you know, of course, you've got Harvey Elliott's emergence. They see Cade Gordon playing minutes in the domestic cups. So yeah, I think you just have to, you know, it was never going to be a really busy summer. You know, I think there is an argument to be made that more money should have been made available, because clearly there still appears to be a gap in the squad, which is most glaring in terms of the backup for the front line. But then you come back to, you know, Origi is an interesting topic, because lots of people say, well, you know, why have we not got rid of Origi? You know, they should have just got rid of him. And it's like, well, that's not how business works, is it? You know, whether you think Origi has got anything left to offer or not, he's still a valuable asset, a multi-million pound asset for the club. And in the absence of a decent offer, what do you do? And also, Origi himself, you know, wasn't prepared to just go anywhere. So it wasn't like, you know, it works both ways. You know, Origi was quite happy to stay and fight for his place. Liverpool certainly weren't going to just, you know, take anything they possibly could just to get him out the door. So, you know, and as a result of that, you know, and do you know what? You know, who knows? I'd love Divock Origi to prove us all wrong and to launch another, you know, famous fight back in his Liverpool career. You know, his career's looked dead and buried at Liverpool before, and he's come back from the brink, and, you know, now we have to hope that he does the same thing again.
He almost feels a bit like the forgotten man, doesn't he? And we've got Scott and Cosmo asking the same questions about Origi, and many others, Keith, are asking about Minamino, who I thought was excellent in the game against Osasuna at Anfield, but pre-season often doesn't tell you too much. Is he a forgotten man, Minamino?
I don't think he will be to Jurgen Klopp. I think he views him in the same sort of sense as Origi. He's another valuable asset for the club. I think, what did they get him for? Just over 7 million. Obviously, it hasn't worked out for him yet, but I think it's difficult for it to work out with him, given that Liverpool's 11 usually is unbreakable in terms of players struggle to get into that first team. Obviously, he went out on loan, and, you know, that started well with him getting a goal against Chelsea for Southampton. And, you know, we were all kind of excited about maybe, you know, that was going to refresh him as a player and get him more accustomed to the Premier League and English football. But, you know, it didn't seem to work out thereafter. So, obviously, he's come back. He's looked good in pre-season. But whether he can, you know, take that step, he'll need to when, obviously, AFCON swings about in the new year, because, you know, I think that's probably why Liverpool didn't look to loan him out or maybe try and sell him on this summer, because when they do sell him on, you likely think it will be for a profit because of the you know, the price that they did get him for. But I think he's still 25, he might be a bit older than that now. You know, he's still a good player. He hasn't probably shown enough and does need to show something to fans this season. When he gets those opportunities, he's just got to take them. And I feel like we say this all the time about Naby Keita, but he's someone now who looks to be taking those opportunities that he's given. And it can so quickly change for you, you know, 3 or 4 weeks and a few good appearances, and, you know, fans can be right behind you. You can be ahead of someone in the team. So, you know, I think there's still a player there in Minamino. There was, I think with Minamino it was difficult because obviously it was around the time did Haaland get sold to Dortmund, and I think fans almost got like confused as though Liverpool could have went for that deal or instead. And I feel like they've always compared him to Haaland in a way, but I don't know if that deal was ever a thing or ever gonna happen. Maybe James would know more, but I feel like that always held Minamino back in a way because everyone thought we got the wrong player. But I don't think Liverpool necessarily did, and maybe it would be too soon to judge. I think what's only been a year and a half, and half of the last season he spent out on loan. So yeah, I think, you know, he's a player that could come to Liverpool's aid at some point, especially in the new year, but I guess we'll have to see. He's got to turn up, hasn't he?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's a mailbag special on the Red Agenda, Kiever O'Neill and James Pearce. You mentioned Haaland, quite a few questions on there, talking about Haaland and Mbappe, Patrick, Owen. They all want to know, James, are these realistic names or not in the next year?
No, I don't see Mbappe. You know, I think him to Real Madrid on a free next summer looks by far and away the most likely outcome. I mean, that was it just shows the disparity in modern football, doesn't it? When you got a situation where, you know, PSG are turning down, what was it, the best part of €200 million for someone they know they're going to lose for nothing in 8-9 months time. But yeah, I think. You know, I think we talked about it a few weeks back in terms of I don't see under FSG the business model changing and the transfer model changing in terms of by and large, you know, targeting players who are probably just below that bracket of what you'd say, you know, absolute elite, you know, signings effectively like Salah, Firmino and Mane were before Liverpool signed them. I think that is where Liverpool, you know, with their data and analysis departments, will continue to target those kind of specifics. So you know, Diogo Jota was a good example of that, wasn't it? You know, I think that one came out of nowhere. You know, no other big clubs were in for Diogo Jota, and then suddenly it's like, wow, you know, this guy is absolutely perfect for Liverpool, and he looks an absolute snip at the money they paid for him. So so next summer is so far away. Who knows what could happen between now and then and whether strategies and policies change. But not in the current structure there. And, you know, we talked about when we talked about Mo Salah's contract situation, didn't we, in terms of the wage structure. You know, it's, you know, when you see some of the fingers banded around for, you know, Haaland's wage demands and Mbappe, and, you know, it's how do you possibly fit that in to, you know, to a club like Liverpool, where they've made such a deliberate attempt to ensure there's not too much of a disparity amongst their top earners.
I mean, FSG, James, are very set on this break-even model. Aaron says it's brilliant that our best players no longer want to leave. Obviously, the re-signing of so many influential players, but does the inability to generate large funds from these types of sales hamper the reinvestment? So he's saying basically by keeping all these best players, by not selling on your Sadio Mane, are we actually hampering the ability to take the squad to that next level?
Well, I think it's just the reality of the situation, isn't it? I think say the pandemic had never happened, then maybe you would have had a situation where your resolve is being tested with 120, 150 million pound bids for Mane or Salah. And then suddenly you've got a decision to make. You know, what do you do? You know, has their head been turned? But I think, you know, any discussion about kind of, you know, imagine, you know, what would you do, for argument's sake, if you could get massive money for someone who's 28, 29, and then reinvest that, you know, in a much younger player, you know, say Mbappe, for argument's sake. But that's just not been... It's not like Liverpool have decided not to go down that route. I think it's just the fact that the world of football has changed, hasn't it? They haven't been batting away offers, and you know, and also those players are happy and content where they are, and I certainly don't think that's a bad thing. You know, obviously people point to the Coutinho one and think, well, actually, you know, when you look back, you know, selling Coutinho was fantastic in terms of it basically paid for probably the two most transformative signings in Liverpool's Premier League history, with, you know, with Alisson and Van Dijk. But you know, I think you've got to be careful what you wish for as well, because, you know, Salah, you know, absolutely carried Liverpool for big chunks of last season, and he looks like he certainly hasn't taken any backward steps since. So yeah, I don't think this idea that by not selling like an elite player and reinvesting that, that's held Liverpool back. I just think, you know, obviously there is a potential issue further down the line where too many of those elite players, you know, are at the back end of their career at the same time. And that, you know, that's what, you know, why there are such big decisions to be made over these contract extensions. One of the reasons why they decided not to kind of give in and give Gini Wijnaldum what he wanted, because it was like, well, hang on a minute, you know, is that a good use of funds for the next 4 years? And they felt that it wasn't. So, but yeah, and I think, you know, in terms of, you mentioned the self-sustaining business model there, and you know, that has been another issue probably last summer and this summer, the fact that they didn't generate anything like what they thought they would do in sales. I think, you know, it's, you know, because the you know, the absolute ins and outs of every transfer isn't published. You know, you know Liverpool tend to put out there the fees, including the add-ons that they get, that they've negotiated. Now, you, of course, you don't know which of those add-ons are realistic and which are likely to be triggered and which aren't. So, you know, if you go by those add-ons, it looks like Liverpool have returned a profit in this window. Yet you have to factor in that the 12 million they agreed with Fulham for Harry Wilson doesn't even start being repaid for another 12 months to help Fulham cope with the Championship FFP rules. So yeah, you know, and, you know, when you think back to this summer, we wrote, you know, Liverpool were expecting bids of 10, 12 million for Nico Williams after the Euros. That didn't happen. 15 million for Nat Phillips. You know, even right up to deadline day, Nat Phillips was still under the impression he could be leaving Liverpool. But because there was no offer forthcoming that Liverpool fancied, you know, he ended up staying put and agreeing a new contract extension, which I think is as much about rewarding him as protecting his value going forward. You know, the same with Origi, you know, talk of 15, 20 million for him, you know, absolutely nothing close. And, you know, part of that, it is because of the way that the transfer wind, you know, the finances of football at the moment on the back of the pandemic. So yeah, all of that has made things more difficult. But I also completely agree with those fans who say, well, hang on a minute, you know, looking at clubs who aren't in the Champions League, whose owners don't have a bottomless pit of cash, they're not Russian oligarchs or sheikhs that have still spent more than Liverpool. You know, why is that the case? And of course, you know, they have decided to take, you know, to gamble, to take risks, whether it's borrowing money, whether it's taking money out of their own pocket. And I can understand why people would say, well, when FSG have, you know, obviously the value of their asset at Liverpool has been enhanced so significantly in the last 10 years, you know, why aren't they prepared to do the same? Now, you know, that I think is a fair question to ask.
One of the contract extensions that was announced on transfer deadline day was Jordan Henderson's. Jackie puts, absolutely love Henderson, delighted that he's got his new contract. But is it right that the club announced this on deadline day, Kiva?
I mean, it was a smart move, was it? I think. I mean, it was probably always going to get announced when it was done, I guess. And that was the timing of it.
Wasn't just kept back for that day.
Yeah, potentially. They maybe knew that nothing was going to actually happen. So let's, you know, get the fans on side a little bit. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it did get the fans on side a lot because, you know, Jordan Henderson staying at Liverpool and probably seeing out his career with Liverpool is, I think, something we all want and need. You know, he doesn't necessarily, in those years, need to be starting every game. I think he can eventually sort of fall into a James Milner sort of role. Like, I don't think he'll actually want to do that. He's just the type of player that'll, I mean, James Milner wants to start every game, doesn't he? So Jordan Henderson definitely will. But yeah, I think, you know, the Van Dijk announcement. I think it came just before one of the games. I don't know. The timings of these things will always be boosts for Liverpool and Liverpool fans, I think. Just obviously then with Liverpool not doing anything on deadline day, kind of, and then announcing Nat Phillips and Reece Williams had signed new contracts, you know, they were getting, fans were probably, you know, a little bit frustrated that contracts were, you know, the new signings almost, which is, you know, I know fans want shiny new things, don't they? And sort of just getting the same players that sticking around for a few years. But, you know, I think that deal was ongoing, wasn't it? It was going to get announced at some point, and that was the day. And just, yeah, I think a really smart move for Liverpool. And I think that's the one thing we have to be thankful for, is the contracts of, you know, key players. This team is still a team that were champions not long ago, and, you know, the spine of that is all there and all extended for a long time to come. And I think one thing, you know, thinking when James was talking about Salah and Mane, we can be almost grateful for, and I think fans will feel relieved, because, you know, this summer there was just no rumours regarding Sadio Mane or Mohamed Salah. It was only Salah's contract, which is obviously still ongoing, the only sort of issue, I guess, for fans. But there was no sort of sniff at all, was there, that those players might want to leave Liverpool. There was no transfer saga. And because there wasn't that, we can't feel almost grateful that it didn't happen. But it didn't happen, you know, and we've been there before with, you know, James mentioned before, Coutinho. They're just not enjoyable times. I think that kind of shows the position Liverpool are in. You know, the best players don't want to leave, even if, you know, the market is a bit chaotic and maybe, you know, bids just didn't come in. But, you know, I think that's a position of strength, isn't it, that Liverpool's best players want to commit their future to the club. And, you know, they will, I'm assuming, add some other players to that as well at some point.
Right, here's one from Crusher. He says, "Hey, Pierce." Crusher, you can call him James. He uses his first name. Mr. Pierce. When Klopp leaves in 2024 and he's got one Premier League, one Champions League, one Club World Cup and one Super Cup, will this be counted as a failure, given he would have stayed almost a decade? So Crusher's got his glass half full.
A couple of things there. One, I would be absolutely amazed if come 2024, that is still the list of Jurgen Klopp's trophies won at Liverpool. And no, I don't think the word failure and Jurgen Klopp could ever be used in the same sentence, because I remember Steven Gerrard saying, when interviewed him just after the Premier League title was won, that as far as he's concerned, there should be a Klopp statue outside Anfield. And I think that should happen regardless of what follows. I think probably what he's getting at is, and I see some people say this, if, you know, by not throwing more money at it, are Liverpool not maximising the abilities and nous of, you know, who for me is the best manager in world football? And, you know, that is probably that is actually a very difficult one to get to the bottom of, because it's all well and good to say, you know, oh, Klopp's not being backed enough. You know, he's having to operate with, you know, one hand tied behind his back. But, you know, all you can do is go on what you're told and what you hear. And, you know, anyone who's seen Klopp when he's been asked about transfers this summer, you know, and people say, oh, he's hardly going to publicly criticise his bosses. But we see it all the time with other managers. We'll say, you know, of course, it's disappointing. You know, we wanted to do more. You know, we couldn't get the deals we wanted. But Klopp goes the other way. He is, you know, he gave me about a 3-minute long answer when I asked him whether have you not replaced Gini Wijnaldum because there's no money, or because you honestly believe in the other options that are there. And you know, and he went off on one, you know, eulogising about the talent at his disposal. So, you know, if he is frustrated that he hasn't been able to do this summer what he wanted to do, then he has done a very, you know, very, very good job of hiding it. Now, would he want more money to spend? I imagine yes, because what manager anywhere would ever not want more money to spend? But, you know, he would have known from the start of the summer, exactly what was possible, what wasn't possible, what the contingency plans were. You know, if X leaves, then we'll do this. You know, if we get an offer for Y, then who should we line up? So it's not like he wouldn't have been like pacing around Formby fuming on, you know, on deadline day because suddenly the, you know, the rug had been pulled from under his feet. So he's a master Klopp, isn't he, as well, of just getting on, you know, as far as he's concerned, you know, he accepts the reality of situations and just gets on with it. And, you know,
But he's very honest, isn't he? And as you referred to before, he doesn't hide his emotions. If he's not pleased with something, he very much expresses it.
Yeah. Definitely. And I think, you know, sometimes he probably gets accused of almost protecting the owners, I see, you know, amongst some supporters. And, you know, maybe to a certain degree, you know, that maybe that does happen at times. But I think it's also because he knows, like, what possible value is there in kind of, you know, of... You know, because when you start moaning about what you've got, then you put seeds of doubt in the dressing room, don't you? In terms of like, well, oh, he's obviously not very happy with what he's got. You know, does he not believe in us? And rather than moan about what he hasn't been able to do this summer, Klopp will be looking at solutions. He'll be, you know, as he has done this summer with Harvey Elliott. And as he said himself, you know, if they had a massive squad, then Harvey Elliott wouldn't have been given those opportunities. We wouldn't have seen whether he was able to step up and deliver. So, you know, and the same with Cade Gordon, who, you know, like I said, I'm sure we'll see him make a senior debut in the coming weeks. So, yeah, I think Liverpool are incredibly lucky to have Jurgen Klopp. And, you know, I still believe that, you know, he will add to that trophy collection in the coming seasons.
Absolutely. We'll finish with some stuff on Harvey. Aaron says, thoughts on Elliot? Can he play 30-plus games this season? You've got other questions here about Liverpool's dynamic in midfield changing with Elliot now involved. And indeed, will he take a more central role when the AFCON comes around, Kiva?
Absolutely, he can play more than 30 games. I think Liverpool will manage him well, just as Blackburn did last season. You know, he played 41 games in the Championship plus cup games and things as well. So, you know, this kid's got legs, he's got energy. You know, he's well looked after at Liverpool. They'll manage him really well. And yeah, he's going to play a massive role. You can see that already from the opening games, just how big of an impact he's already had. He, you know, we're talking about signings and stuff. This term does get thrown around a lot, but he does feel like a new signing because this is the first time he's really been a Liverpool player. This is his debut season, really, other than, you know, he has been involved in the squad before his loan to Blackburn. But yeah, it just feels like his season. It feels like the end of the season we could be looking at a player who's getting like Young Player of the Year award, because that's what he's shown in those opening games, just how good he is. And I feel like he's going to be massive as well when AFCON swings around. And, you know, his relationship with Salah, which I know was annoying people at the Chelsea game because he kept doing the same sort of thing and, you know, wasn't quite getting there. But, you know, their relationship just looks effortless, and that's just going to be a massive position of strength for Liverpool with him in and around the squad. And I think, you know what, you could put him anywhere and he'd just do an incredible job. Such a special young talent. I don't think we can emphasise that enough.
James, are you worried about AFCON at all? Again, a lot of questions on here. And given that we were talking about depth and a lack of signings, how much of a worry is it to you?
Yeah, it is a worry, definitely. Yeah. I think, of course, by the time AFCON comes around, another transfer window would have been opened. So there is still the opportunity for Liverpool to do something in January. And, you know, maybe that is part of the thought process that, you know, essentially Minamino and Origi have got until January to prove that they are ready to step up in the absence of Salah and Mane. I completely agree that, you know, I wrote about it after the Chelsea game last weekend, not because there was any great disgrace in not breaking down Chelsea, because they were brilliantly well drilled, and as much as it pains you to say it, you're talking about the European champions. But it's more the bigger picture. I think when you look at the squad, when you look at the fact Origi hasn't even made the bench, when you look at the fact, you know, playing against 10 men desperately in need of a goal, you know, Minamino wasn't brought on, he hasn't figured yet. So So yeah, I think that has to, you know, that for me, when you look back on the window, that is the one thing I think that's really missing. I think, you know, a year ago it was, you know, the concern was, are Liverpool going to pay the price for not replacing Day and Lovren? And obviously, because you just thought, well, surely three senior centre-halves is leaving yourself a bit light. And as it turned out, you know, it was proved to be a mistake because, you know, although what followed was unprecedented, Liverpool still hadn't gone into the season with enough cover at centre-half. And obviously the knock-on effect then on the midfield of having to use Fabinho there. And similarly, 12 months on, I think the issue, the glaring one, is that lack of backup for the front line. And, you know, clearly part of that is down to the fact that the right offer didn't come in for Origi. So yeah, it's, you know, it's down to Klopp to try and, you know, get more of a tune out of Minamino and Origi in the months to come.
And as you said on your social media, James, 123 days and we could do it all again. the window will reopen. Look, really appreciate your time. Thanks to everyone who sent questions in. There were so many more. We couldn't really get through them all, but hopefully the guys, Kiever and James, have given you some of the top line answers that you were after. Please check out Kiever's piece on the Jeff Stelling war that she was involved in as soon as she's got that up. And there'll be loads more stuff on The Athletic, of course. James, Simon, Kiever, all writing on the Reds in the coming weeks. Thanks for listening to the Red Agenda Extra. We'll see you next time.